All right.
What's going on?
We're on. I'm live. I'm just finishing my mouthful. Sorry. Dr. Avi, how we doing, man?
Doing good, man. How are you?
Good. Just,
what'd you put down?
You know how it goes. How was the day, man? What's up?
It was good. What'd you have for dinner?
My girlfriend gets, for my birthday, Christmas, or whatever, I forget. She got me these, like, made meals. I don't cook. I throw things in the microwave at the end of the day. So she got me this made meals thing where they have, like, apparently really natural ingredients, healthy meals. It's baked in, like, a cardboard box rather than plastic. I like that. I think we got to dial back down on the plastic a little bit. And then I'm lactose intolerant, so it's dairy-free. Guys, what are you, man? You have dinner yet?
Yeah, I did. Had some fish. Yeah, I'm dairy-free as well. I started that probably about 3 years ago.
Me too. 4 years, yeah.
I took like a food sensitivity test and it came back where dairy was like off the charts. I was getting like a super high IgG response to it, I guess. I didn't even know. And I never had like digestive issues. But then when I cut it out, I noticed like a lot of inflammation was going down. I was also just like being healthier with just food and in general. And then dude, and then I like had dairy like one time and then like I got all the symptoms that people get and I was like, dang. So I guess I was living in like a constant state of inflammation. But yeah.
Isn't that crazy? I'm sure I was getting the same thing. Isn't that ridiculous, man? Yeah, mm-hmm. It's serious.
It's nuts. It's nuts. Considering the fact that I used to eat like a bowl of cereal and milk for dessert like every day.
I was big on the milk too. What fish did you have for dinner today?
It's not cod. It's the one that starts with an H. Now I'm blanking on the name. I've never had it before. And it's not halibut. Yeah, I'm going to look it up right now.
With an H. The reason I asked, I don't know what it was. I was scrolling through Instagram and then...
Haddock.
Get haddock with D's. That's right. Dude, the reason I asked this, I was scrolling through Instagram literally yesterday and it was so weird. I had back-to-back worms in salmon videos. I was like, well, how did I get in this salmon hole, you know? Has it ever happened to you? You get in like this hole of an algorithm and you get the same video. But it was three of them and it showed moving worms in the salmon and like one of them was Costco. I was like, but then one after another, I was like, well, how'd I get here? You know?
What did the caption say? How'd the worms get in there?
They said like, you know, you could be getting you have no idea where your fish is coming from. Look into where your fish is going. I've never walked into the supermarket and like, hey, did you catch this salmon, bro? Like, no, I'm not asking the guy behind the counter. Like, did you catch this? No, he didn't catch the fish. He just filleted this thing. Leave the guy alone. How are you going to find out where your food's from? I don't know.
I go to Whole Foods and I trust Whole Foods, I guess.
Whole Foods seems to be good. No.
I think so. I mean, dude, so I grew up a vegetarian. And so like worrying about where like meat and all that comes from was like never a thing for me. I don't even know the type of fish I ate. I'm just like learning as I go. But then I saw that Netflix documentary that's like pretty much anti-fish. And they basically talk about how the whole like the way they catch fish or the way the label works, it's like it's pretty much just like a scam. Like it's not actually like regulated or whatever. It's crazy. I saw it about 2 years ago.
I haven't seen this document. What's the name of it? I haven't seen this.
I don't know the name, but I'm pretty sure. Let me see. It's on Netflix.
Yeah.
I'm just literally looking up anti-fish documentary Netflix. And I don't know if it's Seaspiracy. That might be it. Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah.
Because I love this stuff, man. You understand it. Dude, the gut, the inflammation, the pain, the discomfort. Seaspiracy. It's like a conspiracy. Cool.
Yeah.
I'd like to check this out. Yeah, man. So dude, what's going on?
Dude, a lot of good stuff. Yeah, I did. So I stopped practicing about a year ago.
Completely?
Completely, dude. Completely. Basically, I don't know. I think do you know, should I share like high level the journey?
Please. Yeah. Everything. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, went to NYU for dental, came out, you know, classic associate, just like looking for mentorship, wanting to grow, wanting to learn, had a bunch of associateships my first 2 years out, you know, at the time wasn't the most enjoyable thing, just kind of going through different offices, but I learned a lot. I got perspective. I look back and I'm like, you know, I learned 8 different ways to practice dentistry. And I saw that, you know, some offices had systems, other offices didn't. I think early on, I kind of assumed that if you were a practice owner, that's like the pinnacle, right? Like you got it all figured out. You're a business owner. That's what I thought. But then kind of being in all these practices, I just saw the variation of each one. And over time, I was like, okay, I realized like they're human, they're learning, they're growing, they've got their strengths, they've got their weaknesses. So anyways, kind of moving through that, I was always kind of like just wanting to make a difference. Like I wanted to do something, I guess like something cool. And dentistry to me was that thing. And what ended up happening is a couple years out, I just started burning out on the bread and butter. And then so that's where I was just like, all right, there's got to be something more to this profession. There's got to be something, you know, bigger. So that's when I started to learn implants. And then I got a mentor and started to learn aligners. And so I got introduced to them when we moved. So we moved from New York down to Texas, worked for a DSO. Yep. Went to Texas. I was at a DSO. And then basically like there was a webinar and Dr. Blocker was on the webinar and she was basically like, hey, if you ever need help with ClinChecks and stuff for your aligner cases, just send them to me. I'll help you out. Mm-hmm. So I leaned on her, like blew her email up. I felt so bad because I was asking so many questions, but she was willing to mentor me and help me out. And kind of through trial and error, I started 50 cases in my first 6 months. Didn't really think anything of it. Like I was just talking to my patients about it. Like just like kind of just a blue collar practice. Hey guys, you know, some of these teeth they're not in the right spot. If we can get them in a healthier position, you know, these are all the benefits that'll come from it. And then the aligner reps for Invisalign just started like flooding the office. And they're just like, hey, like, what are you doing? And I'm like, what do you mean? They're like, you've got the most case starts in the group, but you've got the least amount of like oral health scans. They call them wellness scans. It's pretty much just scanning the mouth and hygiene. You kind of show the patient what's going on. So they're like, how are you doing this? I was like, I'm just showing my patients their teeth with a mirror and having them bite on articulating paper. And I'm showing them like where they're putting forces on their teeth, primarily on the front teeth, and just letting them know like, hey, this is causing wear. And there's actually a way that we can kind of solve for this. That then turned into me starting to kind of mentor some of the other doctors in the group. I'm primarily at that office. One of the doctors like 20 years older than me, but he kept seeing me like in the office behind the computer and not on the clinic floor as much. And so he was like, he's like, hey, just, I don't understand. He's like, you have some of the highest production numbers, but you're barely on the clinic floor. Like what is going on? And I was like, oh, I'm doing aligners, you know, it's like 5K a pop, got a couple this week. So, you know, it's been like additive. He's like, all right, can you like teach me? Can you show me? So started kind of coaching him through it. That's when I kind of felt the next level of passion in like just education, mentorship. He started to get results. I went to the leadership team at the DSO and I was like, hey guys, like I would love to mentor more doctors. Could I maybe work one less clinical day? And then I can kind of expand on this with docs who are just looking to start. They saw the value in it, but they were just like, no, we want you to keep producing, stay in the chair. So that was a bummer. But then my wife, she was like, you seem pretty passionate about this. Like why don't you just start consulting on the side? Like just work with some doctors that you know and kind of do that. So I was like, okay, I can give that a shot. I didn't even know what consulting was at the time, but it's pretty much just like a fancy way of saying you get paid to help people solve a problem by giving advice and whatnot. Those doctors, I started teaching them how to do it. They started getting results. That's when I started posting on social media and started getting interest from people. And then it got to a point where the interest level and like what I was offering in like this one-to-one consulting role wasn't making sense. So that's when I created a course. Dr. Ranesh Ganatra kind of helped mentor me and walk me through that. And then, I started making content, doing like free webinars, doing some education like that. And then essentially, you know, showcasing the course at the end. Now we've got over 200 doctors that have gone through the program. They've all gone on to do, you know, a couple cases a month, just like getting going with their journeys. We're completely brand agnostic. And then now we are starting to continue to support the solo doctors, but also now starting to create a solution for DSOs so that younger associates can get access to this pretty much paid for by the DSOs. So that way docs can start helping more patients. So yeah, about a year ago, I was down to like 2 days clinical and then this was picking up and I pretty much looked at my wife and I was like, look, like if I can put like 80 hours more a month into this thing, like I feel like, you know, we can really grow this thing. I can make a difference. And she's like, okay. Like at that point, it was pretty consistent with like enrollments and all that kind of stuff. And then she was like, yeah, all right. Like, you know, let's go for it. And then I did it.
What point in time was this last year or was this earlier than that?
End of 2020.
Okay, so about a year and a half ago. And how many days a week were you at? Just so I can, and listeners can get a picture, because you were saying, so you're at 2 days a week and you wanted another 80 hours, but you said a month. You meant a month, right? Not a week?
Yep, yep, yep.
Got it. 80. So that's where you get the 2 days. Okay, cool.
Yep. So then she was like, yeah, she's like, I mean, you know, it's looking pretty consistent, like go for it. And then like in most entrepreneurs' journey, whenever they pull the plug and go all in, things usually crash and burn. So that's what happened. Everything dried up. Everything slowed down. Nobody was enrolling. I was just like, what the heck is going on? But I kind of worked through it at that point. Like I always knew in the back of my mind, like if this thing truly did fall flat on its face, like I could go back to practicing dentistry. That's never been, you know, my license is active. I'm still taking CE, but you know, I also didn't want to just give up on this thing because I saw like the impact it had on doctors and I see the opportunity. So yeah, so I kept pushing through, really had to like tap into learning more about, you know, marketing, funnels, sales, onboarding. That was like a huge thing. Like I didn't even have like an onboarding process. And so I had to learn a lot there, but yeah. And here we are.
Yeah. It's been a wild journey. No, you're not retired. You just transition from practicing dentistry to teaching dentistry, essentially, right? What do you think? Because you were saying a lot of the dentists that you've been working with have found a lot of value in it. What would you describe has been some of the value, like specifically from some of the people that you've been working with? You know,
so I think the biggest thing that doctors tell me, at least, is the confidence that they get. And so I think what it is, you know, in dental school, ortho is not really showcased for various reasons, but I think nowadays, just kind of with the amount of momentum that Invisalign and Smile Direct Club has like pumped into the general population and the advancements, I think there's a place for GPs to be able to at least start these simple, predictable cases and actively refer everything else out to the specialist. Mm-hmm. And so I just kind of help GPs like narrow the pool of which they should be, you know, selecting cases on, so that way they can have that confidence. And then I think part of it is the relatability. So like in terms of value, right? It's like I share a lot of my personal journey and my experiences with patients. So like, you know, little things to where I remember, you know, when I first started cases, like sure, I had a mentor and they had my back no matter what was going to happen. But when a patient, you're standing right in front of a patient and they're like, hey doc, how long is this going to take? Mm. Like I'm freaking out. I'm like, oh my gosh, I have no idea. Like this could be 6 months. This could be 12 months. And then, so I would basically like be like, hey, let's just bring you back. I'll run this through this, you know, I'll run this through the clin check and then I'll know, and then you'll know, and we'll talk about it. And it's like, I would do that a lot in the beginning, not realizing that like, if you say that to a patient, they're going to, it is the biggest giveaway that you don't know what you're doing. And it's not that I wasn't able to do it, right? Cause I did have the help at that point in time. It was like, I needed to get it going to be able to practice the principles, right? Because at the end of the day, that's what dentistry is. It is a practice. And so knowing your limits, knowing what you should and shouldn't do, I think is like the first step. But yeah, a lot of doctors, I think that they like that. The relatability, I try to simplify concepts as best as I can. So that way they can actually go and start. Yeah. Again, not an orthodontist, not trying to teach people to be orthodontists, really just trying to help docs get started with essentially the equivalent of like the class one fillings, right? That's the pool that I start in. And then after that, you know, if they want to go deeper, I encourage it. And
when does a case kind of graduate, if you will, to an orthodontics level? How would you describe that?
So orthodontists, like cases that I recommend GPs refer, all class three cases, any case that's got like bilateral posterior cross bites, you know, if you're trying to correct a class two, then I recommend referring. I just think, because again, for these GPs, especially ones who are starting, it's all about kind of making the case or selecting the case that makes the most sense for them in their situation. So when you're first starting, you do not want a case that's going to take a long time. You do not want a case that is going to keep you up at night, right? You don't want a case that's going to have a wide array of variables at play. So when you eliminate these things like the class threes, the bilateral posterior cross bites, the class twos, all that kind of stuff ends up really narrowing your pool to where it's not that nothing can go wrong, but the number of things that can go wrong are not as severe and as drastic. Mm. So those are some of the guidelines, but yeah.
It's because I coming from a specialist perspective, I mean, some of the class twos, class threes, cross bites, some of them need orthognathy. It's skeletal deformities and not dental deformities. And, you know, with braces and other type of aligners, Invisalign, that can correct some dental, many, maybe even most dental deformities, but are going to have a very difficult time at correcting skeletal deformities. So those go out, but you're sending them to the orthodontist. Yeah. Yeah. And then the ones that take a long time, I mean, of course, if they get, but then, you know, a lot of orthodontists, it's like one fixed fee, but then now you're dumping this case in their lap. This is the one that's going to take 2.5 years. You're referring out to the orthodontist, but then you're keeping the one that takes 6 months, you know?
So here's the thing, right? Is this is adult only. I don't even go over teens. So all teens still go to ortho. This is adult ortho. And the reality at the GP level is a lot of these patients, they're not even being diagnosed. And they haven't been diagnosed for the last 15 years, 15, 20 years. Because after they're 18, right? It's like braces used to be the only option and most adults don't get it, right? This is where when I was practicing, like my orthodontist was one of my best friends because I referred more once I started doing the cases than before. Because what happens is the conversation is happening way more when the GP is at least doing some of those cases. So from like an abundance mindset, right? It's the pond is bigger. Sure. The GPs might be taking, you know, some of the fish in that pond, but overall the diagnosis net is actually casted much wider. And the crazy thing is on this topic of like class threes and all that, the way that I talked about them, like patients getting that resolve before I did aligners versus after, right? And even the team, because the team for the most part, they're kind of, once you get the system going, like they're going, they're showing the scan, they're doing it. So it's like, patients now all of a sudden they've got this visual, they've got the hygienist talking about it, the assistant, the doctor. I actually had patients, like two patients that I remember, they actually went through with the class three orthognathic surgery to get it corrected. And nobody ever did that before we actually were having the conversations. And I think it's just because the way I delivered the message, like as GP, like I kind of be like, hey, you know, got this class three, you know, you should really go see the specialist and get that fixed. And they're like, oh yeah, like, you know, what's that going to entail? I'm like, it's probably going to be surgery. I'm like, oh man, okay, yeah, you know, I'll think about it. And that was it. Like, that's it. No more additional info, no more, you know, visuals. And you know, I mean, I'll take the blame. Like, I personally don't think understood enough. And that passion that comes across, I think, when GPs talk about procedures that they do versus they don't do, I think there's something there.
There definitely is there. Are clear aligners covered under insurance?
Yeah, some of them. Yeah, if they've got ortho coverage, patients can get some coverage for sure.
I just did a little, like I put out these little quick review posts on LinkedIn, and I was just reviewing the history of Delta Dental and not great coverage. I'm assuming Delta Dental probably doesn't cover clear aligners, is that right?
I think they did have some coverage, but I want to say last year something changed. I think last year there was a change, but before that, I think they did. And that's why I think there was a decent amount of dentists in the aligner space that was all about it. But I think something changed.
Oh, wow. Wow. Yeah. You know, side note, definitely sign off. I'll try and keep it short. I found out 6 months ago that the hospital I work at, the main hospital, we cover three, but the main one, we get insurance for them. The dental insurance is Delta Dental insurance. And lo and behold, the hospital that gives their employees Delta Dental doesn't take Delta Dental. Like, I'm curious about the coverage of everything in dentistry these days. And I mean, the media, everything teeters on, you know, going for insurance, but the insurance really kind of, we're seeing a lot of speed bumps. Could you put a percentage, like, I mean, say 1 to 10, what like percentage or, you know, 1 to 100, what percentage of insurance companies? Because I'm still learning about insurance itself, like all the companies. Would you say do cover aligners, clear aligners?
I think most of them do. I think it's more so the plan that patients get. Like in the practice, so I was in the practices that I was at that was doing it, I would say about half of them had some degree of coverage, right? Okay. Some of them, and then it's a dollar amount, right? So it's like, do you have coverage? Yes or no. And then if you do have coverage, how much? And it would range from like $1,000 to like $2,500.
Wow.
It's pretty significant.
That's separate from like the deductible?
Correct. It's actually, yeah, they will actually pay out on that. It was crazy. Yes.
Oh, wow.
Now, okay. some of them also, then you dial it out, and some of them it's like, yes, they cover. And then it's like, do they cover above or below 18? But there were some plans that did, and it would be crazy. Cause literally I would tell the team, I'm like, if a patient is getting $2,500 of ortho coverage, you better tell them and they better sign up for treatment if they qualify, because that's nuts.
Yeah. And then here's my next question. Now, say you get them to 6 months out and now it's become a complex case. It needs to go to an orthodontist. Does that take away from their orthodontics payments, you know, the treatment care?
Good question. I haven't been in that situation, but if I had to say, I would say if the coverage is used, I would imagine that it doesn't get transferred unless like the GP is then giving the money to the orthodontist. I could be wrong, but that's what I would say.
Okay. So that could be a difficult situation. I'm sure it's different for all the, you said about 50% of insurances that you've seen that you've worked with do cover. How many in the patient, if it's about 50% insurances, what pool do the patients fit in on either side? Is it mostly no coverage and they're paying for out of pocket, or they're getting it covered under the insurance plans?
I would see that there was coverage. Now, I think that some of it too, right? Like, because one of the prices was like blue collar. So like they were getting a lot of like state employees. So maybe it was the fact that state employee insurance is what had the coverage, which is then what, right, skewed that individual practice's patient population. So yeah, it comes down to, you know, which insurances you're taking and then like where a lot of those patients are coming from. So it could be different for other people.
Oh, that's interesting. You said you don't like to do, or one of the case, as far as case selection goes, the longer ones. But what's kind of like that deadline is, if you're looking at a case, it's going to take 6 months, 12 months, 18 months. What's kind of like your, I'm not going to take on this monster of a case. You know what I mean? What's kind of like that timeline?
What's the timeline? Yeah, honestly, anything that is going to be over like 8-ish months, I would say. I usually bake in like at least a round of refinement, just because, I mean, you know, there's other people out there that'll tout like, oh, like I never have to do refinements. Like, cool. Like, I think that's great. I just think when you're dealing with a human being and you're asking them to wear a piece of plastic 22 hours a day, they're probably not going to wear 22 hours a day, right? So by nature, you could have a perfectly planned case, but the execution is primarily on the patient. So that's kind of how I look at that. But yeah, from the start, if it is over like 8 months, I will definitely be sending that. But usually just going through the case selection, by default, that is kind of shrinking the tray number in the sense of, right? Like kind of engaging in that conversation and keeping it. Yeah. But that came with practice. Like I had to actually do some cases and see the patterns to be able to gauge that. But it saves that. I've had the awkward conversation where it's like, hey, this is a little bit more complex, you know, than anticipated. I'm going to send you over to, you know, to our good friends over at so-and-so orthodontics, and they'll be able to take care of you. But like, there's no shame in it. You know, like at the end of the day, like I look at it, like if I was a patient and the practitioner that diagnosed me then realized that this was out of scope, I would actually appreciate it if they told me, hey, this is more challenging than I'm equipped to handle. I would much rather just get you to the specialist. I would feel so much better and I would respect that practitioner. But I think in the beginning, you know, young dentists, like you don't want to look bad. There's a lot of stuff there that you don't want to, you know, you just, sometimes people just don't want to, you know, show that side of them. But I found that like when I was honest with patients in that regard, they appreciated it. So, and it felt good. I could sleep at night.
That's one of the things I'm noticing now as you get more up with the advanced surgery that the sleeping at night's kind of important. You know what I mean? Quality of life is so undervalued as far as referring out in that basis. Now, I'm sure you're already filtering out how many of these cases you take on versus how many you refer. But say of all the cases that you do meet patients and talk with them, how many of them end up being like referred out versus like, you know, you're going to do this, you're going to take on this case, or at least the dentist that you're working with?
Good question. I would say, I mean, if you're having the conversation with all potential patients, I would say you could probably, it's probably, I would say almost like a 50-50 split. Like a lot of patients, especially in a practice where like nothing's ever been treated, you know, I think that kind of puts it there, but you're having the conversation with what, like 8 to 10 patients a day. So there's at least five or six qualified. That's what I would ballpark kind of go with. These are really good. These are really good perspective questions.
Yeah, I kind of like to look at it. I'm also, I want to be transparent in the sense that, like, you know, I pursued extra training as a specialist, and I'm trying to get a sense of, and this is very important actually for the people you're coaching, your training, your mentoring, to differentiate those cases. And then you can't only focus on, I mean, this is patient care. This is ethics. You can't only focus on the cases that you can do. You need to focus on what the patient needs, right? And that's something we see all the time. You see these implant cases, because this is probably the closest analogy to clear aligners and stuff, right? What general dentists are doing versus what needs to be referred out. What a lot of gets referred out is based on their medical history. That's a slap in the face for a specialist. You know, what about the bigger implant case? They're going to go and do it. And now we get the complications, the aftermath. And now it's like, clean up my mess. And so I've seen that a lot. And it's the worst when it comes to airway compromise, because a patient gets infected and they're in the ED now. We're going to have to take them to the OR tomorrow. Maybe they need to get intubated and stay in the ICU. Now, that's not going to happen from aligners, braces, Invisalign, but it happens with implants. And so it's a different, you know what I'm saying? It's like that differentiating factor of, it's that clean cut, like, oh, no, this timeline, we got to get referred out. This is a certain diagnosis that I'm not going to be treating. I'm going to refer out. And, but then also making sure that it's fair, you know, you're not just honing in on what, you know, eat to kill.
For sure. And dude, that's the thing, is like, I am seeing this, like, just the state of the field right now and what it's been, where there's almost no conversations happening, right? So, like, almost none. And so it's not like, the narrative that I'm sharing is not only talk about the patients with the relapse. Like, it's not because to get the engine going, you have to talk about it with anybody who has misalignment or malocclusion, period. That's the first step. Now that is a wider net. Then you can siphon down, and then you can see what you are comfortable taking on. And then especially when you're starting off, right? Those cases are lower and lower. That's why a lot of doctors, when they start, they'll do 2 to 3 cases a month. They're not doing 15 right off the bat, granted, based on, you know, their patient population and whatnot. But most, like, now that we've got docs that are in there, it's like a bell curve. And most of them are starting off doing the 2 to 3 a month, and that's what they're comfortable with. And anything more than that, you know, it's just, I think naturally that referral happens. But I do think that if doctors are just treating the patients who are asking for it, and they're not proactively discussing it, that is where the sticky situations happen. Doctors hit me up on Instagram all the time, and they're just like, "Hey, can you take a look at this case?" And so, like, I used to do that, but then I realized, I'm like, you're sending me this case and it is wild. Like, I don't even know how to correct it. Like, I don't even know how to correct it, because I wouldn't have touched this kid. You know what I mean?
Honestly, it's annoying. It's not professional. Like, what are you going to do? You see an x-ray and a photograph. What are you going to do? You know?
Yeah. So, but at that point, right, it's just like, how did you get in the situation? Like, were you actually in control of the conversation as a practitioner, or did you just say yes because the patient walked in and is like, straight in my teeth? And I think that's and that again is all because of Invisalign and Smile Direct Club. They market it to patients. So patients want this treatment, and they are seeking the dentist and bringing it up. And that's where it's like, you know, it becomes very
dangerous.
It's just an interesting landscape. Yeah.
It's a very interesting landscape. Here's another thing. Cause you've really mastered that conversation, if you will, marketing to your dentist, essentially the dentist, but then also the communication part to bridge the gap between orthodontics, the treatment itself, and the patient. How many orthodontists are you teaching to have that conversation, how to have it, and to talk to their GPs that refer to them, to teach them the cases that they should be referring out?
That's a great question. So I don't think there's any orthodontists in the actual program. We do have Dr. Neil Singh on our support team. He's an orthodontist down in Florida, used to be a GP and then specialized. And he messaged me. He was like, "Hey man, I see what you're doing. I would like to, you know, I'd like to support and help out." And so he's learned, I think, how to have that. But, you know, there aren't that many other orthodontists that I'm actively teaching how to have that conversation. I talked to Dr. Luke Shapiro. He gets it. He sees it. But I think the orthodontists that are following me, I'm hoping they are picking up some of the stuff, you know, that I'm putting out there, in the sense of how to educate and have the conversations with their GPs. Cause I tell orthos, I'm like, you should support your GP, right? Because if you have a local ortho and a local GP working together like that, that level of trust is going to grow. Because like you said, the fear of the specialist is that the GP will then, right, take the easy and only give the hard, or kind of have this like siloed approach. But the crazy thing about human connection is, like, Brendan, like if you were near me and I was doing surgery, right, I would think of you when I'm doing stuff. So even if it was like borderline, like, oh, maybe I could take this, or I should, as a human, and if like we have a relationship, I'm probably just going to send it to you. Cause I'm like, yeah, Brendan can take this. I'm going to keep doing my thing. It's not a big deal. There's going to be more around. And so I think, like, any ortho that's listening, like, I encourage you to at least start having the conversation with local GPs, because you'll get more referrals. And honestly, most GPs are so afraid of doing this. You're going to get more as is. But if you can then have this kind of, I got your back type of relationship, which is how orthodontists that I've worked with have had, it's just, it's so harmonious. And I think that is what, that is the beauty of the profession, is when, you know, we are collaborating like that, but it takes two people to make a relationship.
Absolutely. Yeah. I just say, and yeah, no, it really does. It's just, you know, ever since insurance has an increased reimbursements over time, in fact, they've decreased reimbursements. I mean, I put up a post 2-3 weeks ago, the AMIS sent out an email showing that Medicare B patients have actually decreased their reimbursements by 33% since 2001. So in 24 years, it's gone down 33% when you adjust it for inflation. That means, like, my mentor, an oral surgeon, that means my career, I'm only going to be making the maximum 2/3 of what he made, doing the same work, working just as hard, doing the same work, only 2/3. And now the most important thing is, it's not about the money, it's about the quality of life, because the quality of life allows you to focus on bigger issues more and focus in on the little things, the minutiae, the details, which is what healthcare is about, down to the patient specific level, right? And so what I'm getting to is, this is, as the history shows, you know, less things have become reimbursed, the reimbursement has gone down. You know, you really can't afford a living or keeping your practice open on the two surface fillings for $18 for whichever insurance plan that is, and so on and so forth. You know, preventative care is not, it's not incentivized anymore. And you know, you just can't keep afloat with your stuff. So now this is what I'm getting to, is you see a lot of general dentists, especially, and even some specialists, they're starting to teeter into these other areas. I mean, I know at UConn, it's the prosthodontist that places all the zygomatic implants. But then if it goes into the orbit, it's the oral surgeon that has to do the surgery for the eye, you know, the trauma that goes into the eye. Or, you know, plenty of periodontists, they're taking out wisdom teeth now, and they can take out wisdom teeth in some respect. In some respect, they can't. I mean, there's no check to see if you're being honest or not. But the fact of the matter is, so how did it get to that point? For example, I'm not trying to go on a rant right now, but periodontics was made to save the periodontium. That's the tooth, that's the cementum, and the bone and gums and gingiva around it, right? And now it's not about saving teeth anymore. I mean, how, like, yes, there's scaling and root planing, there's crown lengthening, but it's all about implants now. That's not what the profession was designed to do, but that's how it, quote unquote, survived. But now it's kind of bridging into areas. There's these really big implant cases, and many implant cases are excellent for all dentists, but many implant cases, there can be some serious complications. I mean, and we've seen it all. So so the conversation begins, right? But then, because the whole media and insurance plans, they kind of own all of dentistry now. It is owned by insurance, right? The financial mm-hmm. structure. But now it's creating butting heads of everyone. And rather than everyone kind of like focusing on, we are the saving tooth specialists, we are the root canal specialists, we are the wisdom teeth fractures and, you know, orthognathic jaw surgery. In these gray areas, you're seeing people really teetering into the upper level. And what determines the upper level? I'll give you proof for it. It's all based on finances. And this is something I'm very concerned with the direction of dentistry's going, because no one's trying to do orthognathic surgery. Doesn't get reimbursed very much. It has to take place in a hospital setting. No one's trying to do orthognathic surgery, but everyone's trying to do the big implant cases. Everyone's trying to do a million Invisaligns. And I'm just concerned, because I don't want to see patients get put in harm's way when they're teetering into those. It's exactly what you said, understanding where your cutoff is. And you're seeing a lot of people go over the boundary into the cutoff, and dental schools aren't teaching that, you know, not enough. They are a little bit, not enough. I don't know. I don't mean to go on a rant, but.
No, you opened my eyes to, like, because I usually see it at a micro level, right? On the teams level of in GP offices, where it's like, you know, the staff won't talk about something if it's not reimbursed by insurance, right? Like you know, the doctor will come up with a treatment plan regardless, all GP procedures. And even at the staff, right, the front desk will be like, oh, well, your insurance doesn't cover it. So it's, you know, X amount. And it's just kind of, you're looking at them like, who the heck cares if insurance is covering or not? They need this. Like, this is what they need, right? And so that's at the micro level, but you just opened my eyes to the macro level. The profession is correcting for what insurance is and isn't covering, right? And it's almost like people kind of see where the opportunity is and then they just go and hit it hard. I didn't even realize that. I didn't even realize the orthognathic surgery isn't even covered, but the fact that less people are doing it, it's kind of like this macro scale of cool. We are not going to do the thing that's not covered because of that, when in fact it actually comes down to communication, right? Because if you have a certain type of conversation with the patient, if it's in their best interest, right, it's like our job to show and deliver the value and then execute on it such that the patient's well-being is improved. And now that I'm saying it, it almost seems like it's like lazy for us at all specialties, right? You're just not having the conversation. Right. You're avoiding it by doing this insurance covers. It's a cop out.
Right. And we should all be talking exactly what you said in terms of what's best for the patients. Also, side note, many orthognathics are covered under insurance. If it's based on a dental facial deformity, they got all this skeletal deformities and they're getting ostracized. There's like a lot of things you need to kind of discuss with the insurance company where it gets kind of weird. But essentially, like, you know, you need to be in a hospital setting. You need that. But no, at the end of the day, people aren't pushing to do that surgery because it's like the payout isn't much. It takes several months to years to plan with an orthodontist. You take them into the hospital. It's a very risky procedure. I mean, you could have permanent nerve damage to your lower lip. It happens to like one of 10 patients about, a little less than that, but like it's serious. I mean, you're in the ICU overnight. Some places do it so quickly and stuff they don't have in the ICU, whatever. But yeah, my whole thing is we need that conversation going. And that's why I really appreciate that you're bringing up that point, because that's something that's not happening. Everyone just wants to butt heads. I call that a little mind problem. I think we need to talk big mind problem. We need to communicate and see that whole funnel that you mentioned, which in a way it's a marketing funnel. You start with the general dentist. You see all the maximum patients, start on clear aligners and filter through the patients that need this. If they need it that bad, they need it more than the 6 to 8 month cases. That's a fact too, right? They need to go to orthodontists. But the other thing is we all need to be not only communicating, but working together, because insurance, all the insurance plans across the board for the most part they're really killing the profession.
They are. No, they absolutely are. And that's where it's taking that conversation and some of the stuff that I try to like empower GPs with, right, is like even at a GP level, like you see very successful GPs who are taking insurance and those who aren't, right? And then I think what happens, it's like a lot of docs, like, because people will ask like, oh, like, should I go like out, you know, fee for service or do like PPO insurance? And it's like, I think what it comes down to with a lot of doctors is the confidence and belief in themselves and what they do, right? Because like essentially you're doing a startup business that is built off of you and your brand as a dentist. And so I do think like a lot of dentists that invest in a lot of CE and they have the ability to execute on cases. And I'm not just talking about the cosmetic stuff. I think what ends up happening, and it's hard, it's hard to do it today compared to the because of insurance and all that stuff, but it comes down to, are you willing to learn how to be essentially an entrepreneur, a business owner, and learn how to market yourself, learn how to brand yourself, learn how to, you know, curate a patient experience that's truly exceptional, that makes them want to come back for you and the experience, not because you take your insurance. And I'm not saying like the vast majority of the general population wants that, but I'm pretty positive there's a pocket in the area that you're in or in the area that you're thinking about going that would value that. But I think what happens is a lot of dentists, I don't blame them. They just get scared. They get nervous, right? It's like taking insurance is the easy marketing play, because that's all insurance is. It's just marketing. Like you're just getting a funnel of patients. The trade-off is you just can't charge them a lot. Like that's the trade-off that you made. But if you just take that marketing,
it's the same treatment. Yeah.
So, that was my rant on fee for service and PPO. It's just like, you know, there's so many, I know so many amazing dentists, and I just wish they would bet on themselves even more. Or even like, I'm not saying don't take insurance, like take insurance to start your practice, to get patients to come in the door, but then have a plan to get out. Yeah. Have a plan to get out and then know that you'll lose some patients, but the ones that you're going to keep will be your raving fans so long as you, you know, delivered on that experience. Cause I see all these like trendy offices these days, everyone's got a a modern dentist, like a modern practice. And it's like
holistic dentist. Yep.
I went to one the other day and I was like, dude, they market themselves like this top notch, like, you know, millennial dental practice. And it's got everything that you would think, right? The amazing website, the IG presence, everything. I go in and they're like, you know, I get like this backup. I get this like newbie assistant. Like it's just like her first day, which is fine. Like I give grace to team members that are training. I didn't even care. So I was like, cool. Can I just like throw some Netflix on? Like I want to watch some Drive to Survive. And they're like, oh, the Netflix isn't working. And I'm like, what? And like, yeah, it's been like that. It's been like that for a couple of weeks. And dude, I was so triggered because I just remember when team members would say that crap in the office. And I'm just like, so why hasn't anyone fixed it? Like,
this
is the patient experience. Like, why? And it sounds so petty, but to me, it just bothers me because it's like you're marketing this practice. Like, it's this super modern thing, but your freaking Netflix isn't working. Like, that is what makes dentistry look so bad. It's like, stop giving these like shell of an experience. Like, commit to it. Like, commit to it.
That's tough. Yeah. The Netflix is kind of like just pay for electricity or for the Netflix subscription. It's kind of simple.
It was a tech thing. Like the internet wasn't connected. I'm like, cool. So just like connect it. Like, I'm sure you guys have an IT guy. Like somebody can just connect
the password
it. I know. I was sitting there trying to do it myself. And I'm like, what am I doing? I just put in my headphones and just listen to a podcast.
It's crazy how it gets to that point. Yeah, it's these DSOs, man, they're backed by private equity. That's another theory I have. I think you were talking about the ponds. I think, you know, you could have a corporate practice that's owned by a dentist who built it from scratch, or maybe his father or grandfather or her built it from scratch. But that's kind of keeping money in the system. Once you take money, big money, like private equity, investment banking money into the system, that's when, you know, the walls kind of expand too much and it explodes. I think it's kind of like shaking up a Coke bottle. But yeah, I mean, that'll all fizzle out over time. It's just... I don't know. It's interesting to see. You know, clear aligners are, I think, a really good bridging point because they get to, like you said, diagnose the patient for other problems. I really hope that conversation, but I think people listening to this, I really like to see them understand that you got to have that conversation with your specialists. Refer to them a little more. You're going to get a lot of stuff back and then start to explore what cases you feel comfortable with doing. That's a big point, you know?
Yeah, it's huge. And it's starting. And I think like, it's all relationships, right? Like, I think I can't tell you the number, like early on when I was in different practices before any of all this, it's just like, I would just refer to whoever the owner doctor referred to. And it's like, I don't know. I never took the time to actually try to build a relationship. I think because I just didn't know, like I was supposed to, but like, if you know, if you're a younger doc out there and you're listening, like make it a point to try to at least call the office or meet them. Cause I'm sure if you reach out, you know, like the specialist will respond, their team will respond, somebody will, and, you know, and try to just create that because I think it goes a long way. Cause I just think you shouldn't only refer to someone because the owner refers to them. I think you should create your own relationships because you are your own entity and, you know, you need to have a relationship with the person to some degree, right? On who you are giving cases to, just to kind of have. Just to have that common thread, I think, of communication.
And then, yeah, exactly. And then also, you know, what's kind of your goal? Do you want to maintain, just continue to work for that doctor forever and ever? If that's the case and you're happy with your position, you know, maybe you don't need to go meet that doctor you referred to for the last 23 years. You're just going to keep working for your boss. But if your goal is to form your own company, yeah, you need to develop those relationships, whether it's to maintain them with them when you branch out and start your own thing, or how are you going to start the relationship with those new doctors? Maybe the ones you refer to when you move to another location, they know people in that area. That comes down to self-awareness, you know, like understanding where you really see yourself most excited and motivated and how are you going to get there? How did you get to your point today? So about a year ago now, you said that you stopped practicing with patients full-time. Now you're practicing in the sense of teaching other providers. And did you see yourself where you are right now, say 5 years ago?
No, absolutely not. Dude, 5 years ago was the pandemic. I was like, I look at some of the pictures from back then. It's crazy, dude. I didn't even realize, like, I was so inflamed. I was drinking a lot. You know, I think it was bad. It was bad. I did not see in 5 years that I would be, you know, living in Texas with a 1-year-old daughter.
Congrats. I didn't know you. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. She's a little over one now. It's wild. 2024 was quite a year, but yeah. And yeah, we're moving back to New York in June. So I'll be up.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
2 months. Congrats. No way. I didn't know that. No longer Texas. You lost the fun in it, or too hot?
No, it is hot. It's been getting real hot. No, we're moving back because we've got my wife's side of the family's up there. And we just realized, you know, in this stage of our life, we want to be closer to some family. You know, we do have a lot of our friend circle up there as well too. So yeah, there's, when my wife brought it up that we should consider it, this was like end of 23. Yeah. I was not that open to the idea because I love Austin. Completely changed as a person in the sense of like, just developed a better understanding of myself. I did a lot of like self-work here, created this, a lot of change. And so I just got like a really positive association with Austin, but then I had to kind of like work through the mental kind of gymnastics of like Austin did not like create the things that I did and the changes that I made. Like those were all me, and I can be me in another location, right? It's not contingent on where I live. And so that was just something I think, yeah, dude, there was early on. I mean, I did a lot of work in therapy and whatnot. And so like for just like understanding more about like who I am, you know, what I'm working towards, purpose, fulfillment, all that stuff, that a lot of that work I was doing here. But yeah, man, I did not think 5 years ago. And that's something that on the Instagram feed, I follow a lot of like motivational stuff too. And that'll always pop up. It's like, you know, don't forget that, you know, the person who you were 5 years ago, you know, would be proud of who you are today, or this is the life you dreamed of, like that stuff. And I'm always like, dang, that's like, that is crazy. But no, I did not think this is what my life would look like by any means.
You mentioned the motivational speakers on the Instagram feed. You didn't mention any salmon worm feeds. No, I'm just kidding.
No, dude. Yeah.
I can't go wrong. I've seen this worm in my mind that just popped up. I'm like, that's the opposite of motivation. That's freaking you out. I bought sushi the other day, and now I'm thinking like, do I have worms in me right now? Probably do. But back to you. Dude, you're in Austin. I was in Austin actually a year ago this month for a, you know, bachelor weekend. I loved Austin. It's so much fun. It's a great place. The food, it's popping. I mean, they said before the pandemic, all those buildings in the city area, they said that there was nothing there. And now you got all these, you got skyscrapers in Austin now. And I was just blown away.
Yeah. Yeah. When we moved in 2020, some of the tall buildings were there, but ever in the last 5 years, I mean, yeah, there's like enormous buildings. Meta has like a massive building. It's crazy. The place is transformed. They're building like a one hotel downtown. It's crazy. No, but it's good. I mean, we do like a 2 day in-person courses. I started doing those last year. And so the next two are going to be here in Austin. So in September, I'll be flying back for it. So I'm excited. I get to come back to Austin.
Awesome. Awesome. So you got like a nice spot, like I guess a studio clinic area where you can do the courses.
Yeah. So, well, we were doing it at like a really nice Airbnb, like just hosting the event there. And then my videographer, he's actually got a spot where his business partner in their office building, they actually have like a full-on training center. So we're doing it there, and then it's got like a smart board. So like we'll pull up the ClinChecks and the cases, and I'll be able to actually like walk through specific cases and kind of show docs like what to look at, what to look for. So I'm pumped for that. And then he's also got a podcast studio attached to it. And so my plan was like, while we're there, just rip a couple, you know, one-on-ones with the docs, and just like, we can talk, you know, we can talk aligners, but also like get into like, you know, life, dentistry, mindset, stuff like that. I feel like it can make some really fun conversations and content.
Yeah. Yeah. You mentioned that your wife's side of the family is up here in New York. Where's your family from?
Florida. My family's in Jacksonville, Florida.
Jacksonville, Florida. Okay. Okay. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Florida. Awesome. Okay. So, I mean, there's so many flights in between Florida and New York, so that'll work out just fine. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the Westchester Airport, I believe they've got direct flights to Jacksonville. So that's what we're planning on, because that's going to be closer. Yeah. We'll be a little bit away from JFK, like over an hour. It's, yeah.
What part of New York?
Close to like Danbury, Connecticut, like on the border.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So that's like, I think a little bit higher up in Connecticut, and you're just across, Where's Poughkeepsie, Schenectady? Where is that?
I actually don't know where those are. We're about like an hour 15 north of the city.
Ah, okay. 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 And then that'll be like 30 minutes to 45 minutes to Westchester. Probably 30 minutes, no? Something like that?
Yeah.
So you're just up to there. Because then if you keep going up another, 2 hours, then you hit Albany. But you're in between Manhattan and Albany. Okay. Okay. I'm just trying to get a sense of... Oh, cool. Cool.
Yeah, most people can't dial that out. I used to be able to say I live in Manhattan, and then I used to say I live in Austin, and now I'm like, yeah, I'm about an hour north of the city.
It's perfect. Yeah. And then they'll be like, yeah, you're upstate, and you're like, well,
yeah, literally every time, like, oh, like Albany, right? I'm like, no, not upstate,
not that upstate. Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, good stuff. So thanks for coming on tonight, man. I think we had a good chat. I really like how we could kind of bridge the gap in between, you know, specialty, getting towards it, but beginning that conversation to kind of differentiate the lanes, if you will. I think that's very important. And I appreciate that, you know. We got to do another podcast in the future, hopefully soon. I want to talk about marketing and branding, because I know you have a lot of insight on that we didn't even touch on. We barely scratched the surface on that today.
I know. Dude, you know? I'm down. I mean, I enjoyed this. This was a lot of fun. I didn't want to steer the conversation away because we were hitting some good stuff. But yeah, I'm down to get back on and chat marketing and branding. I think there's a huge, I mean, I love talking about that. That's like, in terms of like, what have I learned a lot about in the last year? It's that.
I know. I've been watching you for the last 4 or 5 years. Four or 5 years now through residency. I mean, we chatted before. Let's do another podcast soon, because I got to get ready for tomorrow now, and I want to try and get this up if I'm lucky. But let's do another one soon, if you can, next few weeks maybe. And I want to go all in on marketing, branding, social media platforms, different strategies you've found. Like, let's chat about it. I know you had a conversation with Pat the Dentist a few weeks back. I chat with him about marketing stuff all the time. Yeah, let's bring it full swing. Let's round out that topic a bit.
Do you want to? I got my calendar up. Do you want to put something on the books now, or you want to just message on IG?
Oh, I like that. Let me.
I learned it from Alex Hormozi's workshop. They call it BAM FAM. Book a meeting from a meeting.
Alex Hormozi, is he the one? The game. What is it? Game? Is that him?
Acquisition.com. Yeah, The Game. That's his podcast.
Yeah. Someone just put a comment on the Spotify earlier today and asked me what I thought of The Game by Alex Hormozi, right? Is that a Beast. Movie? Is that a book?
So The Game is his podcast. Phenomenal, dude. Phenomenal.
Oh, that is his podcast, huh? And then he's got that wife with like the really deep voice.
Yeah. Layla. Dude, she is one of the smartest people in terms of like running a business, like running a company. So brilliant. So brilliant.
I've seen a couple of her pieces and I've been like, she gets it. She gets it. Okay. Let me look at, I got to pull up two calendars because, all right, we're in April. Mondays, Wednesdays are best for me right now. I just got on a busy rotation. So now my days, like I can only really do my TikTok lives. Yeah.
Do you want to do like in 2 weeks, like the 20th?
Let's do the 21st. I have nothing on the 21st. Let's do it.
Cool. Same time.
Popping that. Can you do the same time? No, I mean 8:30. 8:30 would be better. Rather than.
Yep.
Sweet, man.
Yeah, let's do that.
All right, we're booked. We're locked in.
Let's do it.
Good stuff, sweet, man. All right, I'm gonna go. I'm gonna try and put this up right now.
Awesome. Yeah. Whenever you do the short forms, you can add me as a collaborator, and I'll accept it so we can get some visibility on it.
Oh, yeah, man. Yeah. I'm getting him up. We have a team now and we're working with, I kind of do that with Dosa Dental, and then some of them I'll do it. But yeah. Definitely the post too.
Yeah. Some people like don't, or they don't know they can. And I mean, I know you guys usually do, but I just throw it out there like that. I can, I'll definitely accept it if you guys throw it my way.
Yeah, man. Thank you. Cool. All right, dude. All right. You have a good night. Thanks for coming on. I'll see you. 2 weeks.
Sounds good.
All right.
Take care.